session number 19777, Reel 10.
Bill Norman, Reel 10.
They said you might get pneumonia. I'm going to dig in up there. So I thought, well, don't be idle. Get on and stir yourself and get something done. So I did and went up there. And we dug. My number three came along. And he got some blankets. German blankets. He was like that. Other fellows would look for Lugers and binoculars, but not Johnny. He'd look for blankets and things which he would sell on the black market after. We all went to sleep, and during the night we got shelled, and there was a mighty big shell came over, and it landed right in that pit where our mortar was. And when I looked at it the next day, it was full of holes, and all the ammunition was smashed up. But none of it had exploded. We could more or less put all the bombs together, but none had exploded at all. Somebody came up to us and said, look, your mortar's gone. We need someone to take some casualties back. Will you volunteer? And we said, yes. And we were given an officer who'd been wounded, and he was in a bit of a bad state, and he was lying on the top of the hill in on the stretcher. So we went to pick it up, and we must have been standing right on a fixed line of a German machine gun. Suddenly there's a great shower of bullets and tracer came over. I went back. We all dived for cover over back where we came from. And while we were lying there, the guns stopped firing. Someone said, get the bloody stretcher and let's get out of here. So we got the stretcher. The casualty had managed somehow to get himself off the stretcher, badly wounded as he was, and take him, get in cover, behind cover, the same as we had. There was one missing, and I went across to find it, and it was one of our lads, and he had been shot through the head. So our only thoughts at the time was, oh, not poor old so-and-so's had it. Our only thoughts were, oh gosh, there's only three of us now, we need another to carry the stretcher. We got somebody and we set off back. We were behind the German lines, as you can imagine, and you didn't know what to expect. Going down the road carrying this officer, we saw flashes of German artillery behind us, and these shells landed somewhere on the road ahead of us. And we saw a massive flash come from our area. We knew that that was our artillery. And they landed. We all dived for cover. And then one of the stretcher bearers trod on a mine and blew his foot off. Somehow we got together and struggled along to the regimental aid post. And it was a terrible sight inside there. It was a big barn. It was covered in straw. There's fellas lying around, British and Germans, all moaning and groaning. And there was a doctor there with his hands all covered in blood and cutting somebody up and bandaging them or operating. And he says, who've you got there? Mr. So-and-so. He said, right, look after him, Sergeant. And the Sergeant left. And he said, right, put him in here and put him there. And the Lance Corporal with us suddenly turned on this sergeant and called him all the names under the sun. And the reason for it was that we had to put one of these live blokes among a lot of dead. And the sergeant said, look, he said, he's not going to last 5 minutes. He'll be dead. And we've enough here to look after who we can save without him, so he might as well leave him. But we didn't think much of it. And I remember there was a German, a young German then, and he was shouting, oh, Mutter, Mutter, wo ist mein Mutter? He wanted his mother, and I felt really sorry for him. I only hope he lived. The chap who we had to put among the dead lived. I met him later. The one who lost his foot, I think he died. We managed to get back to our troop, and I was sent for again. This time, by the armourer. They were very short of light machine guns. Bren guns had conked out for some reason. And they captured some German guns, and I was renowned for being a bit of a gun nut. And he says, can you make these fire? And I said, well, I'll have a look. And they were all okay. There was nothing wrong with them. And I said, well, they should be all right. Right, hang on. A party of you, take them to so-and-so troop. I think it was 3 troop. They're over so-and-so along there, and they pointed out where they were. So we set off. I don't know, forget how many guns were, probably about 6 or 7. And on the way, there was some fella. He says, he was moaning. He said, go, we've got to go here. We've got to take these. Don't know why we should go. I don't think we should go. Let's get lost. And nobody seemed to be in charge. And I said, come on, keep going. And we set off and kept going. And I didn't know where the hell I was. And this fellow kept moaning and said, you're lost, aren't you? Come on, let's go back. And I said, look, we've got to get these guns to that troop. We're going to get them there. And you're going to get us all killed. And suddenly a voice shouts out, halt! And the blood froze when I heard that. He didn't say halt, he said halt. And I thought, that doesn't sound English. So I just halted. And all of a sudden, hell let rip on us. Bullets and gun mortars and the lot. We'd walked right into the Germans. And, oh gosh. Suddenly someone yells out, run for it, or words to that effect. And we got up and ran. Everybody was there. No one had been hit, despite all this shower of bullets and things. And I thought, oh, I'm going to get it from that character now. When suddenly a fellow came running across from somewhere, and he says, are you Norman? I said, yes. He says, oh, I've been sent to find you. We've been pushed off that place where you were sent for. And we're at a different place now, and I have to take you there. And I got hold of this fellow by the scruff of the neck who'd been moaning. I says, hey, I told you where you were right from the first place. You will shout your mouth off now. Keep it shut. Anyhow, we joined the troop, and we helped. We stayed with them because they were they were expecting an attack, which came in, and we beat it off. After that, I went back again to my mortars. Well, it wasn't a mortar, but I went back to the platoon. I didn't get any other job. Oh, yes, I did. I sat by the roadside at the MO. I was making some tea. Or we were making some tea and we invited him for some. 3 fellas crossing the road got hit with a burst of machine gun fire. And had the greatest admiration for our doctor. When anybody got hit, he just put his flag up and walked straight out. No hesitation whatsoever. And I never ever saw him get fired on when he had that flag in his hand. Well, these three coming across the road, one staggered across and collapsed. One laid on the road and the other ran back the other way. And he shoved the flag into my hand. He says, go and get that one on the road. I'll look after this. And I looked and I thought, God, I've got to walk on that road and there's a gun firing down it. So I waved the flag and I walked out there cautiously. Nobody shot at me. Down the road a few hundred yards, I could see the front of a tank. I thought, that's a Panther tank. And I looked at this chap. I'd been trained as a stretcher bearer, so I thought, right, don't touch him, see if he's any bones broken. And I said, are you conscious? Oh, he moaned. I said, look, I'm gonna get you away now. Are you all right? Have you any bones broken? And while I was being nice to him, this bloody gun fired. This tank fired its main armament. And there was a mighty bang. I just fell like a lump of jelly on this chap. And the shell hit the road a few yards ahead of me and ricocheted. It was a solid armoured piercing shot. And I just grabbed this fella and I don't know how I did it, but I just picked him up as though he was a piece of rag and shot off that road, bones broken or not. I don't know who he was or whether he survived or what. But later I saw this tanker, they destroyed it. And I think the shell that came across was an armoured piercing one destroying the gun. Because the gun was peeled back like a banana. I joined the... We were formed into a rifle troop, back into a rifle troop. When we weren't using the mortars, we were not normal fighting riflemen. And we started to advance right at the front. There was three of us, no NCO. And I'm going along and we spread across the road, some across the road, some to the left, some to the right. A German fired a Panzerfest and it hit one of these fellas on the road. I think it was a direct hit on him. And we saw it come and everyone took cover. Very quick, it all happened in a flash and threw ourselves on the ground, blocked our ears up. There was a mighty bang. And I looked and I saw a great lump of this chap's head with hair on it in front of me. I thought, oh God. We didn't go much further when we halted. And there was an explosion nearby and it wounded two of us. Not me, but two of the others. And I thought, well, that's a rifle grenade from that house. I said, right, to my mate. I said, cover me and I'll go and search it. And I ran to the house, but fortunately there was nothing there. Eventually the rest caught up and we stopped. By now it was getting dark and we laid there for hours on end. I thought, oh gosh, there's not much of us if the Germans launch a counterattack. And then suddenly somebody came along and said, right, withdraw. I did do, and I was very pleased to find the Scots Guards had come and taken over from us. We were bundled into trucks and taken back, and I got the surprise of my life on the way back. We'd come up this road where it was all destruction and roads up and everything. The roads seemed to be mended. There was bailey bridges put up. All this had happened overnight. There was policemen on the bridges with white armbands and red caps on, just as though they were standing out in the middle of the town, directing traffic. There was camps made and aid posts for the wounded. I thought, well, if I'd have known all that lot was behind me, I wouldn't have been half so frightened. So So back we went. We weren't back long in Ravenna when another job came up. The 8th Army had gone forward on the right and the 5th Army on the left, and somewhere in the middle was a little gap where they decided to put our commando to stop the Germans getting out of this great encircling movement. There wasn't a lot of us. By now we'd had a lot of casualties. And we went to a place called Consolici. And I believe that's where the big cemetery is now. We waded through mud, marsh, and somehow got into this gap. On the left of our position was a river, and on the right was a canal, and we were in between. Everything went well. The troops went forward, and we came to a road leading to Argenta. You've got the river on one side with a bridge, which is blown up. You've got the canal on the other side, and each had great big banks. We were in between on a bit of land that divided them. On one side of the road was us, and on the other side was the Germans. And you could throw a grenade across, and they would throw a dozen back. So we didn't do that anymore. Fighting went on all night. But we just had to stay there. Just our presence there was preventing the Germans from using that. They knew that British troops were there. Avoid it. The retreating Germans. During the night, I woke up. And the chap in the trench with me was looking around. I said, what's up? Yeah, what's happened? He said, oh, we've just had a mortar stonk on us. He said, some of them landed only a few yards away. And I said, well, they didn't even wake me up. I said, what's all those lights in the sky? And he says, it's German aircraft machine gunning the guards. And I said, oh. I went back to sleep. And later I found that my cousin had been killed at that very time in the night in the guards by an aircraft machine gunning. I must have woken up and seen it happening. Rather a coincidence. Dawn came. The Marines arrived. They were going to do an attack across the flooded water. And they brought some boats up. And while this was about to take place, along came the Garibaldi division. And we shouted out to them. They were walking right out on the top of the mounds of earth that protected, stopped the canal from overflowing. And we said, don't go any further, the Germans will get you. Chaps who could speak Italian were shouting this, of course, you see. And they said, oh, we're not bothered about the Germans. We'll sort them out. And we just laughed and said, oh, watch them run in a minute. Because you couldn't lift a finger across there without you a shutter. And to our amazement, they just went across and we thought, well, they've all gone and it surrendered. Then one came back and they said, it's all right, we've cleared the Germans, you can come now. That what obviously had happened is the Germans had withdrawn in the night. So we moved forward. We were advancing now. We stopped at some place, a village, and liberated it. And to our surprise, there we are, liberating a house, and a woman came out and played hell with us for going in her house with these dirty boots on. And immediately she started to bake bread for us. And immediately out came the bicycles, out came the horses, that had been hiding them all from the Germans. But when we arrived, there were no thoughts of hiding them. They trusted us straight away, you know, that we're not going to take the bicycles off them, we're not going to rob them, we're not going to hurt them. And we didn't, of course. We decided we would stay there. We'd get the mortar. We'd only got one mortar left. We would set it up. And we did do. While we're doing this, it's just getting dark. A shell arrived from the Germans. And I watched it. And then another one arrived. And then a third. And then it stopped. So I said to the sergeant, I said, "Son, are we staying here the night?" And he says, "Yeah, why not?" I said, "Did you notice those shells that came? What about them?" I said, "The first was a minus. The second was a plus. The third was in between. That's what they call a long bracket followed by a short bracket." I said, "They've got us ranged." I said, "The first shot that comes out of there, we're going to get hell." So after a few minutes, we're moving. And we started to move to another position. We set off across some open country. And there's hell let loose on us. About 150 shells came. And we all dived into a narrow ditch. And someone yells out, "Run for it. And don't leave your ammunition behind." And we grabbed these and ran. And we found out later that we'd been seen by a troop of Polish tanks. And them thinking we were Germans, they let rip at us with everything they got. And not a man was touched. We set up again. By now it's dark. And a solitary rifle shot came. So we all stood still and listened. Then another came. Then a burst of machine gun fire came. So we all dived into position ready. And we heard a voice shout, "Get the effing Piat on them, that'll shift them." So there's great yells from us. It was one of our troops thinking we were Germans were about to attack us. So we were withdrawn. Next day, I left the 8th and the 5th armies to carry on with it. Back to Ravenna. All our wounded was drifting back, and we stood by again for another job. This time we were going to go over the River Po, and all the parachutists were going to jump across. Fortunately, we never had it to do because the 6th South African Armoured Division went straight over. That was the end of the war for us in Italy. For me, anyhow. We had the Germans surrendered shortly after, and we had the job of guarding them. They just got a great bunch of them, 1,000 or so, dumped them in a field, put some wire around them, and told them to organise themselves, which they did with great efficiency. We'd sit there, and these Germans would sit one side of the wire, and as soon as it got dark, we'd go up to the wire and start talking to them, and we'd have a big confab, and we'd talk about the war and find out battles that they'd been in, which we had, and talk about it. And we got on great with these Germans. So they said to us, "Can you get us some wine?" So we said, "Yeah, okay." So we got a jerry can full of wine, and we had a bit of a party with them. None of them ever tried to escape. It would have been the easiest thing in the world for them to do if they did, but there were no point. And one thing that really saddened me was they all had dogs, and they thought the world of these dogs, these Jerrys. And we would take them. They wanted to give them to us because they couldn't feed them, and the commandant told them to get rid of them. And one German had a big Alsatian, and he said, "Please, would you shoot my dog?" I said, "Oh, I don't want to shoot your dog." And he says, "Well, I've got to get rid of it." I said, "Well, I tell you what, come with me and I'll let you shoot it." And he says, "Yes, I would do that." So I said, "All right." And it dawned on me that I'd taken this German prisoner from on the wire to a quiet place, and gave him my loaded pistol to shoot his dog, which he did, and we buried it. And he took him back to the camp. He was full of tears and a pocket full of cigarettes from me. The South Africans came along, and they were very pleased to take these dogs, and most of them spoke German. After a while, we were withdrawn and sent down to Naples, and got on a ship, I think it was a Carnarvon Castle, and back to England we went, where we were to reform and go out the Far East. But the atomic bomb was dropped, so the commando was disbanded. Me being a regular soldier with time to serve, I got sent out to Number 4 Commando in Recklinghausen. Now, they were guarding a German prison camp. And these prisoners, they were in there because they were Nazis. The Americans had just pushed everybody in who was a Nazi, and they were in an awful state, and the food they got was dreadful. It was like pig swill. And all us fellows from Italy and that, we felt sorry for these Germans. We liked them. We got on well with the Germans, and so we did what we could for them. We'd give them cigarettes and pass messages for them. Number 4 Commando, fellas, they weren't like that. They had a hatred for them, rather like the First World War. And quite a difference between them and us. My troop went down to look after a village called Zudovik, which was a mining village. And when we got there, we set up in a pub. The landlord organised it for us. We had a lady to cook. The German policeman came. His daughters were to serve us. And we lived like lords. But the reason we were there was because the displaced persons would come out of their camps at night, where they got arms hidden, and raid and terrorise the district. And they'd been to Zudovik once or twice, but our presence would stop them coming, which it did. We weren't very much liked by the Germans there to start with, mainly because, being 2 commander, we put a board up, a pub side.